Good Tuesday morning here in Western Kentucky. This is your podcast host, Edward Marlowe, and this is For Those Who Inquired. Neil, Bradley, and I in studio. We were not together last week as we both had a lot of things going on, and we kind of wanted some news to matriculate through the area, and we seem to have that.
Had quite a bit, really.
Yeah.
Including some maybe breaking today.
Absolutely. Don't want to reveal it just terribly yet.
Well, got to make them listen.
Yeah.
You got to pay for it.
Yeah.
By listening to us.
And by pay for
put
it.
Put you through the misery.
The misery of it.
Yeah.
Right,
and then
exactly.
At the end, we might give you a little nugget.
It's a free podcast. We do appreciate any monetary contributions that come our way. But yeah, it's absolutely a free podcast. And we love to talk about all things racer athletics, anything going on nationally in the sports world, and anything really going on in particular. Big breaking news from a news perspective. Andy Beshear, governor of Kentucky, has announced that all outdoor activities with 1,000 people or less shall be maskless from this point forward.
So I want to go watch some softball today, no mask.
No mask.
Baseball today, no mask. I mean, here in the region.
Here in the region, yeah.
Good
it's
deal.
Big. It's big news.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely impactful from a sports perspective. Sure, you're going to have a few games, particularly tonight, where Paducah-Tillman and McCracken County, two district rivals, both playing some excellent baseball. Paducah-Tillman still undefeated at 15-0, coming off of a big run in Owensboro where they claimed the inaugural Class 2A championship. Obviously, Manny Donald doing a really good job there. I mean, there's no question that Paducah-Tillman has a lot of talent, but this is also a McCracken team that is top five in the state. They've lost a couple of tough games, some close games. Really good Lyon County team was a tough loss for them on the road. Lost to St. X in similar close fashion. So they've had a couple of tough losses, but they've also bounced back for some really big wins. So, you know, wish Zach Hobbs and Manny the best there. That'll be a great game tonight. But, yeah, getting back to the mask mandate, it's big. You've got a lot of great softball, baseball, track and field, tennis coming up in the first region and all over the state of Kentucky over the next month. And like I said, long as you have 1,000 or less, which you typically don't draw more than about 300 or 400 for most of those outdoor events anyways. But if you even get close, you're still good.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it's like, well, if there's 1,000 and eight, it's like, come on. They're not going to do it.
Yeah, they're not going to count the eight after.
They're not. They're just not going to do it. So
yeah.
I think for most of the folks are fine. And also, if a Karen comes up to you and says, you need to get your, tell her to shut up. Tell her to shut up. You can't say anything right now. If we're inside, you can come in, Karen. But Karen, just shut up.
For me, I likely will still wear a mask just because I am, if I'm going to games, just me personally. I still have some family members that aren't particularly vaccinated.
Are they going to be there with you?
No, but I don't.
Then it doesn't matter.
That's true. That's a good point. I think as I continue to interview people, I just don't want players to get possibly sick. Like if I transfer it asymptomatically, I'm not going to be fearful about it though. I plan to go to several games moving forward and I'm really looking forward to it. But I think for me, I don't ever want to be the cause of a trace of like, oh man, well, Ed was interviewing kids again and two of the kids got sick. I just don't.
They should have got vaccinated then.
I'm glad you brought that up because I think it's extremely possible that I don't want to say it'll be mandated, but I don't think they can mandate it, but I would like to see the possibility of student athletes of many ages, probably high school and up, really move in that direction so that we just, I don't want to see them miss seasons again. Miss if you're going to miss games, let's miss games because, you know, maybe you had an unfortunate injury. Let's miss games because maybe you have some academics that you're taking care of, or you've got a, you know, tests or school to handle, other projects. I don't want it to be for COVID again. So we've digressed on that, but I do think it's big news. I think we're going to start to see some full ballparks. I think we'll see the football season in the fall. I think will be greatly impacted in a positive way from that perspective. Now, some of the high school football games in Western Kentucky draw more than 1,000.
They do.
But that's
not many, though, but some do. McCracken County does, some of the big schools.
McCracken-Tillman 2 years ago had 7,000 people at it. It was fabulous, actually. And we know Crosstown Classic here.
Yeah, they're going to draw more.
Yeah, Murray and Callaway be a great game. So, big news that actually has made its way through the realm here in Western Kentucky and the college basketball ranks is that six-year Murray State men's basketball lead recruiter and assistant coach Shane Nichols is headed to Radford men's basketball. Do you know who they are? Do you know their mascot?
I don't.
They're the Highlanders.
Okay, no, I didn't know that.
Right, I neither. So the reason that this is typically when you have mid-major coach swapping, it's, I don't want to say it's a good thing or a bad thing, but a lot of people frown on it. You usually want to go up or just go up. You want to keep going up. But there's a very unique situation here in which Shane Nichols, not only is he a Radford native, scored more than 1,800 points in his career at Radford High School, was a top 15 player in Virginia 2002-2003, his senior season, but he's going to join his brother.
Yeah, that's big.
Darius Nichols. Darius obviously has been a long time revered and highly thought of assistant coach. I think he was linked to the Northern Kentucky job a couple years ago before Darren Horn took it. There were a lot of speculation what's a good word for it? Encircled, been wrapped around Darius as to where his first head coaching job would be. Come to find out, it's at his hometown. And I just think that that's such a unique opportunity for Darius and Shane.
Yeah.
Shameless plug, we're actually going to have Shane Nichols. Neil and I will have Shane Nichols on the podcast later this week.
Two podcasts in a week?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, absolutely. Really looking forward to it. Shane has agreed to give us all the company secrets. No, he hasn't. He has not agreed to that, but he is definitely going to sit in with us either by phone or in studio for a few minutes, give us some of his time, some of his thoughts about his experiences at Murray State. We may be able to wiggle a couple of good stories out of him, but nonetheless, it's just such a unique opportunity for two brothers to kind of take on this leadership in their hometown.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Probably dreamed, we're going to coach someday.
Yeah, it kind of gives you chills.
But together, you honestly probably don't think. Maybe against one another.
In your hometown, too.
That's what I mean. The odds to get that opportunity are probably pretty astronomical, to be honest about it. But then for both of you to get it to come, that's pretty nice. I realize the one hired the other, but still, that's big.
Shane
has to be accomplished for his brother to want him, not just, well, I'm going to hire my brother. He's down on his luck. And that's not the case.
No, and Darius, this is a team going to that accomplishment.
Yeah.
This is a Big South team in Radford that unfortunately isn't returning its leading scorer. I believe it's a freshman guard that's actually now signed with the College of Charleston. Mm-hmm. Previous coach took the job at, I believe, UNC Greensboro.
I believe so.
Yeah. So Darius comes in. You're exactly right. This is a Big South Radford team that finished second in the conference last year based on conference record. Went 15-12. They're not that far removed from having Carlique Jones on their team, who actually just played at Louisville and is now going professional. I mean, Radford's a good, good program. Javonte Green just recently graduated from there within the last 5 years. Was, I believe, Defensive Player of the Year in the Big South. Hey, Radford's a good, good program that just so happens to have to be dealing with a Winthrop team that's been phenomenal over the last 3 or 4 years. So there's a lot of history there with how good Radford is. And again, this is his hometown. That it's brother, it's hometown. Yes, I understand there's probably going to be a lot of expectations come in, go 30-0 or whatever. Jokes aside, right. Like there's going to be a lot of excitement around the program because of these two guys joining forces.
And Shane, I mean, the last 4 years, he's won three championships.
Yeah.
Didn't get one this year. Three out of four in most conferences at any level, most people would take it. I'll take it right now. I'll sign it up every time. Give me three out of four. I'll take it. And for Shane, he's brought winners in. He's been part of winning teams, and I think he will continue to be that. So looking forward to Shane. I really hate that I didn't get to spend a lot of time with those guys this past year.
Yeah.
Because of COVID. They were considered tier one. We were in tier two, so no direct contact was allowed. And
it was all by phone.
I got to talk to him, but I didn't get to spend any time with him. I really do hate that.
So just some double-digit scores. Lots of guys developed under Shane Nichols, Tim Kaine, Casey Long since he's been here, Ronrico White, so on and so forth. We keep going. Matt McMahon. obviously this is a coaching staff, but Shane, there's only been two departures. Adam Wells of WPSD tweeted that yesterday. He's right. There's only been two departures from Murray State's men's basketball staff. It's been a lot of continuity.
Yep.
Kane took the position with Dayton. He had to go be with Anthony Grant. I get that. Anthony's his guy. Kind of a family situation, familial, but not like true blood brothers or anything like that. Right. This is a little different. So you've only had – McMahon has always preached continuity, family, tradition. Those are things that have been even homogenous on his staff, no matter who he's brought in. So it's going to be really interesting to see who comes into this spot.
Yeah.
You know, because not only is Shane like the digger, Shane's the guy that's like out there with the shovel and the pail trying to find the dudes to come be at Murray State. But just a quick list of guys that were double-digit scorers while Shane was here. I typed this up late last night. I'm not trying to disparage anybody. There's plenty of guys that have been developed in this program that aren't double-digit scorers. But just a list of guys that, over the last 6 years, averaged 10 points or more at Murray State University. Jeffrey Moss, Wayne Langston, Bryce Jones, Jonathan Stark, Terrell Miller, DeMarcus Croker, John Morant, Shaq Buchanan, Tevin Brown, Darnell Cowart, KJ Williams, Javion Eaves, and Chico Carter Jr. And Chico is the only one that is no longer a racer, but was here 2 years and developed into that. So you're looking at, I mean, you look at the continuity there. That's a long list of pretty talented guys that gave quite a bit of time and effort to this program, and to the and this staff helped churn them out in a much more positive way. So, you know, it's a testament to Shane's, testament to the staff. It's a testament to the development. I know this last season didn't go particularly as well. I know personally Shane was really looking forward to what this Murray State season can potentially be about. Has been working hard on a lot of the recruitment that you've seen, the Trey Hannibal situation, the Carter Collins situation. You know, you have Elijah Farr in the fold, and it looks like this afternoon another in the fold as well. I'm not sure how much Shane has dealt with this situation being over the last couple of weeks motoring into his Radford opportunity, but the Racers do get a commit, fittingly enough. It looks like the Murray State main men's basketball account is going to start taking on the bat signal, or the racer signal.
Okay.
The eyeball and the three horses.
Uh-huh.
We have seen that tweet come out, and sure enough, I have had it confirmed by staff members that that will be the new notification, as Shane Nichols used to do.
Yeah.
Shane used to tweet out three horses and eyeballs, and everybody knew the ponies were running.
Yeah.
Somebody was headed this way. So that is now a signature part of Racer men's basketball, courtesy of Shane Nichols. So it's kind of a – I think it's a neat homage to him.
Yeah.
I challenge – you know, I say I challenge. I encourage everybody to kind of go see some of the outpouring that's come from within the Murray State men's basketball program. And I'm not going to read every tweet, but obviously the players have been reaching out. Coach Matt McMahon had a personal statement today. I certainly encourage everybody to kind of go check Twitter and read those things. Shane is extremely well thought of.
Yes.
And getting to that commitment, you know, Neil, what this comes down to is you had two scholarships left, and you were probably thinking, if you're just an outsider looking in, it's got to be some big guys. It's a big guy. I don't know if it's big, as in like size-wise, but it's a 6'7", 210 forward. I believe Demiri DJ Burns. He goes by DJ Burns. Lots of DJ Burns is out there in the college basketball world, but this particular Demiri DJ Burns is of Southern University. He played there 2 years this past season in six games, averaged 9.3 points, 5.0 rebounds on 45% shooting. Again, 6'7", 210 at Southern. I believe that's where Sean Woods is coaching.
Still. Only played in six games, though.
I
don't know what the injury, sickness, and what?
Not that I particularly have seen. I've been told by some staffers that they see a little bit of Anthony Smith in him.
Mm-hmm.
They see a guy that's real physical, see a guy that really kind of wants to get it done in the low post. Again, probably maybe plays a little bit bigger than his size.
Right.
And we saw that in Anthony. And I'm not going to go ahead and just shoehorn that. Like, you got to earn that. Like, Anthony worked his ass off to not only get back from that injury, but just played with such an intense motor. Again, probably one of my favorite motors to watch. We've seen Shaq. We've seen Jonathan Terrell. I'm not trying to take anything away from all of those, you know, first-team all-OVCers over the last few years. KJ, Tevin, all hard workers, but I don't know if I've ever seen somebody just literally never smile and work as hard as
on the court.
On the court.
Yeah.
Yeah. Off the court.
Nice guy. What a dude.
Yeah.
Pleasant. But you'd never know that that person existed during the heat of competition.
Yeah.
The death stare, the. Just a pleasure to watch that.
Yeah, terrifying.
And that in our realm, when you say Anthony Smith, like, that's one of the ultimate compliments. Like,
yeah,
okay,
yeah,
I'll take that guy.
So that's what I was going to say. If DJ Burns, he goes by DJ, so I'll just start calling him that. If DJ Burns of Southern University is even like 50 or 60% of that, that's good effort.
Yeah,
I'll give you that. You want it to be more. You obviously want to empty the tank. But if that's kind of what they're looking at, that 6'7" middle post guy that's going to get you 6 to 7 points, be a problem in the low post defensively, and get those tough rebounds that nobody really wants to scrap for, then I'll say, you know, that'd be interesting. You know, that certainly will be a key addition to Murray State men's basketball. Neil, I wanted to talk a little bit about Major League Baseball, too, today.
You do? Okay.
Yeah, unfortunately, I was at the Cards-Reds game this past Sunday.
You were, huh?
Yeah, it was beautiful weather. Oh, my gosh. Well distanced. They have I know you haven't been back to Busch just yet, but I strongly suggest attending. They do require you to wear masks.
I won't be going.
Oh. Well, that's fair.
Not going. Not watching a baseball game in the heat with a mask on.
I will say
we
were up in the sky almost.
Yeah.
And so we were on the cooler side. We were in section 442.
Well, it's not hot yet.
It wasn't.
You know.
And so, as a matter of fact, I had jeans on. It was actually rather chilly up there. Wind was blowing. It's shady. It was a 1-15 game. And the Reds just didn't show up.
I've been to Cardinal games. The coldest one I've been to was an opening night. It was 37. And
jeez.
The hottest I've been to, it was 99 at first pitch.
Which means, it got hotter.
I was in the shade, but
it was 99.
Miserable. Yeah. The hottest I've been, actually, that I've ever felt, I had second row seats, Steve Carlton versus John Denny, Cards Phillies. That's how long ago that was. But it was one of those, back when they had the AstroTurf, and I'll never forget this, probably 94, 95 degrees that day, and it was that sweltering humidity, and you could see the heat waves coming up from the artificial turf, and you could see the left fielder but could barely see him for the heat waves generating across the field. It was absolutely miserable unless you were a beer and Coke salesman. And if you were, you had a good day. Because they couldn't get it to you fast enough.
Speaking of that, they actually do not allow vendors. That's probably the one thing that I did miss. I really like the intermittent vendors between innings and things like that. I'm not a cold beer drinking guy, but I like popcorn. I like cotton candy. I like the circus and the pomp and circumstance that comes with baseball.
Ice cream in a helmet. Ten times better than any other ice cream.
I did have ice cream in a helmet.
Of course.
And that
you
made,
gotta have it.
That made my effing day.
Yeah.
There were some elements that obviously I missed, being elbow to elbow with fans, getting ribbed all the time. I was, you know, one of the few Reds fans in the stands, so of course we were, you know, dismayed. We had a nice little comeback, but Luis Castillo has just not pitched well this year. Not yet.
They're not mean to Reds fans, though, are they, in St. Louis?
No. They are not mean.
It'd be like me and mean to a puppy. I mean,
thank you.
You know, now you know somebody. They don't deserve anything.
I'm pretty sure the Reds were in the playoffs last year, and the Cards were not.
I think that might be right.
Well, but,
last year didn't exist as far as I'm concerned.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
60 games worth of crap.
I say these things. It was a good atmosphere. It wasn't the same, but it was nice to be back. We ate at Bally Sports Live, had a nice Nashville hot chicken sandwich. It was nice to actually just kind of get back to the ballpark. I love Busch Stadium. Really hoping I can go to a couple of baseball games in other places in the United States this summer while I've got some time. It's crazy. The Reds lost 7 straight, and then we took, in extra innings, we took the Dodgers.
Saw that, yeah.
5-3.
I think the Padres softened them up for you.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, honestly.
Extra inning win Sunday.
Whew, Fernando Tatis Jr., what a beast. Hey, I actually want to go into this super quick. The crazy thing for me was Cardinals fans relentlessly booed Nick Castellanos.
Yeah.
Relentlessly, every time he touched a bat, they booed him mercilessly. I was pretty impressed by that. I thought it was kind of funny. I think he relished it. Of course, it didn't go very well for him. I think he went 1-for-4. But the Reds just didn't muster a comeback in time. Jordan Hicks was pretty effective in the eighth inning, did give up a run. And then the Reds just didn't have enough offense. And, you know, Tyler O'Neill decided to hit 2 home runs off Castillo. So, I mean, it was mostly big hits and a little bit of small ball. But the Cardinals just scored right out of the gate. And when Castillo gets behind in the count and when he gets behind in run support, it's hard for him to throw the heat that he likes to throw. So, and Flaherty was phenomenal. Flaherty was perfect, I believe, through 4.5, 5 innings.
He's been good lately. He's
been really
little rough to start the season, but he's been good lately.
He's 4-0 now.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll give him that. I mean, he's been pretty good. Here's the crazy thing. Wainwright pitched a gem yesterday and didn't get the win.
Yeah. Gave up 2 homers to Reese Hoskins and otherwise.
Which, I mean, it's Reese.
Fantastic.
You're gonna
But yeah, I'll take that. That's not Waino's fault they lost.
If Uncle Charlie is gonna pitch like that, isn't Waino 37?
Gosh, I think he is.
And he's the same age as Joey Votto.
He can have a lot left, but still.
Man, when you do that?
But still, that's pretty good. Yeah. If he can, what you're looking at from Waino at this age is keep us in the game by the time we get to the sixth inning. That's what you're looking for. Anything beyond that's awesome. And
you got to give Waino some run support. Yeah. He deserves better.
Yeah, he does.
I want to talk a little bit local about a couple of Diamond teams that had some really good success this past weekend in Lyon County and Callaway County. Lyon County in 2020 had so much talent in Calista Collins, Kaylin Conger, Sydney Melton, who will be playing in the OVC. She's committed and signed to Southeast Missouri, probably as a catcher. Calista signed, committed to Rutgers. Kaylin will be playing for Quincy Division II softball.
To Rutgers? Has she ever been to Rutgers?
She visited, yeah, for sure.
And she selected New Jersey.
The Scarlet Knights, man. She wanted to be in the Big Ten. I don't blame her. I mean, Big Ten softball out of Edible.
Jersey. I wouldn't want to be in the Big Ten that bad.
Yeah, that's fair. It is Jersey. That's fair. What I wanted to mention with Lyon County and Callaway County, first of all, first region and second region softball is terrific this year.
It is
absolutely terrific. If you look at softball in the first region, McCracken County, Marshall, both really, really good. Graves County kind of in that middle ground. Then you've got Murray that's won 2 games in the fourth district. You've got Callaway that's like kind of struggling to get a fourth district win, but now they're 11-5.
And they just won the title.
And they just won the inaugural Kentucky 2A class championship. This is what I was going to get at. So Lyon County in 2020 had all this young talent that was probably favored to at least make a run at the All-A. COVID hits, they don't get to play their season, and it's really kind of devastating for those young ladies and for young ladies across the state and the country. It's not, but just putting it in a microscope here, Lyon County had a lot of expectations last season that they had to push to the side. And a couple of really good seniors, actually, Allie Culp and Nellie Walker, who really would have helped them, I think, win anywhere between 28 and 35 games. I mean, they were going to be really good last year. So just a few quick notes on what Lyon County was able to do in Owensboro this past weekend at Jack C. Fisher Park. I love the All-A tournament. This is the first time in a while I didn't get to go, but I definitely was watching from afar. Neil, listen to this. Had a long-lasting rain delay on Saturday afternoon because that's, you know, classic All-A weather. It's what happens every time. So they ended up getting to play 2 of their pool games. Joke aside, pool. It was pretty wet. They beat Owensboro Catholic 5-0. Then they absolutely annihilated 5-time defending 2015, 16, 17, 18, 19. Yeah, 5-time defending All-A state champion Holy Cross, 16-3. They finally graduated a lot of that talent that's helped build them into a power out of Louisville. Then they had to wake up early on Sunday. They beat Nicholas County 5-0. They blasted Trimble County 15-0. Raceland was probably the prohibitive favorite to make a run at the title. They beat them 16-6. Run ruled them.
Yeah.
And then in the championship Sunday night, 24 hours later after their first pitch, they survived against Owensboro Catholic again, who made it all the way back to the championship game, 10-9.
Man.
They literally outscored their opponents in 24 hours. Neil, here's a few numbers. In 24 hours, they outscored their opponents 67-19.
Man.
On their way to a title. Here's some batting averages. I won't go through everybody, but just some of the bigger ones. Grayson Wynn, who bats fifth, went 11 for 17 in six games. Nine runs scored, seven RBI. MVP, tournament MVP, Calista Collins, in those six games, went 10 for 20 with 12 runs. She scored two runs in each game, 11 RBIs, four homers and three doubles.
That's good.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Sydney Melton went 444. She was 8 for 18. She had 7 runs scored and 8 RBIs and 2 homers.
My gosh.
Sydney leads the state. She's tied for the state lead in home runs. I've written a little bit about her. She homered against Callaway 2 weeks ago, which we'll get to in just a minute. She has 10 homers through 19 games. She's homering every other game right now. And then Calista has 9. She's almost homering every other game. So those two young ladies are having a prolific season. Kaylin Conger got enough done. They got contributions from everybody. Their 9-hitter, Raina Corsi, hit 308 for the tournament. She was their worst batter.
Yeah.
She hit 308. She had a 31% chance. She actually had a better chance of getting on base than 308. But I've gone into it just stating how prolific from an offensive showcase they put on. And this is a Lady Lions team that 2 weeks ago lost to McCracken County, lost to Scott County 2-1, lost to McCracken County 10-6. I mean, they've been playing great teams. Scott County, always like a perennial favorite to somehow win a championship every year. McCracken County, obviously, offensive powerhouse this year that's been really, really good. They beat Caldwell last night 10-0 in Princeton. Behind two or three home runs. They're just really, really good, and the Lady Lions have kind of been in the thick of that this whole year. Lost to Henderson 6-5 on a walk-off homer. Henderson is probably favorite to win the second region. So it's just to play this way and to win this title after waiting a year. This is only the second championship of any type ever in Edible history. The only other championship is Cullen Brown in 2016.
Wow.
When he won his individual title. They've not won a championship in any other sport at any other time in the history of the school. It's crazy. It's crazy. So it's big time. Even though it's a small school championship, it's big time. We move a little bit closer, and with I know you've done some reporting on this as well, with how well Callaway played.
Yeah.
I just want to point out how significant those wins are. E-Town is solid. Boyle County, I believe, was either 13-1 or 12-1 coming into the Class 2A tournament. Boyle County is terrific at softball. And Warren East is the defending from 2019, since we didn't have the 2020 season, state runner-up. The Lady Raiders have been good for years. They lost to Male in 2019 in the state championship game. And Callaway beat all three in what I would consider big-time hits, good pitching from Izzy Housden, and great play from Addison Hicks at the leadoff spot. And they just played small ball and got it done in games in successive fashion. They beat E-Town 4-1, beat Boyle County 4-2, and Warren East 4-2. So I just wanted to give some quick nods to those two teams, because that's a Callaway team that not only lost to Lyon earlier this year, I was at that game 6-3, where Sydney Melton actually poked a homer for her fifth straight game to start the season in that one. But they came into the weekend having lost to not only a pretty solid Murray squad, 2-1, which that's always a tight game anyways. Mm-hmm. Those teams, it's a classic crosstown.
Yeah.
Those teams literally could be 0-10 or 10-0, and then it's going to be a tough game no matter what. And then lost to a solid Crittenden County team that's got some really good offense under Stephen Smith. So, I mean, they were kind of, I don't want to say reeling, but they were coming off a couple tough losses. So they probably don't come into that tournament as a favorite.
Yeah, I didn't think they would.
Yeah, you think it's got to be Boyle or Warren East that maybe comes away with it. Nope.
Well, the last time Callaway won a state championship, they won the whole thing.
Sure did.
I still remember that distinctly. We carried those games on the radio. I think Jeremy Bell went up and did them, and I think maybe John Rose ended up doing it because Jeremy had another commitment or something, did the championship game. But we had engineers for the games back then. And my engineer
back in the day,
Billy Pritchett, Billy said, hey, and he gave me like 2 months notice. Says, I'm going to be out of town that weekend. I'm going to Chicago for some sort of a convention to sue a school. He's in school at Murray State. Could you cover for me? I'm like, oh, yeah. And I looked. It's like, oh, state tournament. I said, well, first of all, I mean, they'd have to win the regional. You know, that probably won't be any games then. Hey, guess what? They won the regional. So, all right. So, anyhow, I'm engineering the game. They play like at 11 on a Friday, 10 on a Friday. So we're all set to go. Remember this like it was yesterday. Jeremy says there's some sort of delay. They're calling the umpires out. And there was the Jack Fisher Park. Maybe the first year they may have had it there.
Maybe.
And it turns out the plate, is it Caitlin Fox? Caitlin Fox, was she the really good pitcher for Callaway?
Caitlin Fox.
She called the umpires out and said, I need you to come out here and take a look at something. They had set the plate to 60 feet and 6 inches. And, of course, she'd pitched a few games in her career, recognized it immediately.
60 feet, 6 inches.
And had everything else.
Professional.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, that's baseball.
That's baseball, yeah.
Yeah, so they had to redo everything there. So we had a bit of a delay. They got things done, and they went on and did it. Of course, thunderstorms rolled in. They won a couple games that day.
Yeah.
They play the next day. Here come the thunderstorms. I'm pretty sure I'm right on this. The championship game started, because they're trying to get done on Saturday. Championship game started at 3 o'clock in the morning on Sunday. And at about 4:10, Callaway had won the championship.
Unreal.
Yes. Me thinking, I got a couple of games. All right, first of all, they got to make the tournament. I'll be out of here. After, you know, they'll play their two little games and may lose. James Pigg and Fox and everybody else wins the whole freaking thing. But it was awesome. I mean, it's like, hey, if I'm going to be here, I want to be running a state championship. So it was really great. I forgot. I'd drop that in there.
No, that's great. And like I said, the reason that I brought these two teams up is it just means that there's going to be a fun race both in the first region and the second region tournaments.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, the tough part about it is the 4th District continues to be tough in every sport to get out of. Somebody's not going. And, I mean, Marshall's got a big win against Callaway early, 8-7, lost to Murray before all those girls came back from the state tournament to start the season, I believe 6-2. So Murray's looking pretty good right now, but they've got to win the next two to kind of hold on to that number one seed. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, this is a Marshall County team that's ranked in the state. This is a Callaway team that's now 11-5 with a Class 2A state title. This is a Murray team that is pretty solid under first-year coach, you know, I believe it's Kimberly Pidcock. So it's just one of those situations where you all of a sudden, well, like, who's going to get out of the district? Well, Marshall's probably favored, but who's the other team? Then you look over at McCracken County. Paducah-Tillman's got a few good wins. You've got Graves County. I mean, I don't know what to think, you know, in the first region. Then the second region, like I said, it just comes down to Henderson, Lyon County, and I am trying to think who the other contender is there, and I've drawn a slight blank, but it's definitely Henderson. Madison North Hopkins will always have something to say, but it definitely, you know, and then Lyon County is certainly in that conversation. So it's just, you know, it's really, really tough when you're that good of a team. Only one of you is going to be in the state tournament. So really exciting stuff for both of those teams in Owensboro. And we say these things, and Paducah-Tillman, of course, ran roughshod baseball-wise for its Class 2A title in Owensboro this past weekend in a big matchup against McCracken County tonight. So, Neil, you know, we've digressed quite a bit, but I just wanted to give those two diamond teams a little bit of love there. You know, I know that it's a lot of these teams have just been so hungry for baseball and softball just to give back and play, and we're seeing them really deliver. And I think that's probably what's been the most exciting thing for me throughout this summer. I'm looking for, or throughout this this late spring, I'm looking forward to getting to a few games over the month of May. I know that that's a big month where teams are hoping they're playing their best baseball and softball, and we'll see kind of how it all shakes out. So, Neil, yeah, we're going to have, like I said, quick reminder, we're going to have another podcast later this week. It does look like we're going to hear from Shane Nichols, and we might have some more breaking news later this week about a basketball program in Western Kentucky.
All right. Also, Murray State baseball and softball now back on track to make the OVC tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you brought that
up. With wins, Murray State getting the sweep in baseball over EKU, and Murray State softball taking 2 out of 3. So, and I think they play North Alabama tomorrow, and SIU hosting Murray State today in baseball in a non-conference game. But both of them back on track to make the tournament. If they continue to win, they'll be in there. Only four teams go with the revised format due to COVID.
No, absolutely. And I'm really glad you actually just reminded me. One other thing I wanted to quickly talk about, former racers, current racers as well. Young man John Morant has been playing some mighty fine basketball.
Yeah. It's not just his putting up stats, he's putting moves on NBA players. It's like, Ja, come on, man. So, you're embarrassing those dudes.
Well, so in his last five games, which they're only they're 2-3 in those games, but it has been against Denver, the Clippers, and then a huge road sweep against Portland. Huge, if they want to make the play-in at least, but definitely still pushing for that 6-7 seed, which 6 is going to get you above the line from the play-in tournament. John, the last five games, is averaging 29.2 points per game, 7.6 assists, 6.6 rebounds. He's shooting 70% from the free throw line, almost 71, shooting 45% from the arc. Last night against Denver was tough. Well, I say it's tough. He still finished with 27.6 assists, 6 rebounds, and just 3 turnovers in 30 minutes, shot 67% from the field. He did go 0-for-4 from 3. It's his first game where he kind of didn't necessarily have the
didn't they go like 4-for-32 or something as a team? It was horrible.
Yeah, it was not great. They really kind of struggled. You could kind of tell 7 road games in 11 days finally got to them. That's the final road game for them. They went 4-3. Memphis went 4-3 in that road stretch and had a chance to go 5-2. I mean, they were right there in a really, really close battle with Denver on April 19th. They lost in double overtime, 139-137. So, of course, that was the game where Ja literally went off for 36 points, 12 assists, and 8 rebounds. Nearly had a triple-double. And nearly did it again last night. I say these things. Memphis certainly is in really good shape right now with about 11, 12 games to go. They've got a real shot. They could potentially miss that play-in. 7-10 this year, remember, plays the play-in tournament. To figure out who the 7-8 seeds are going to be going into. So if you get to the 6th seed, you're in the tournament. You will be playing the 3 seed, whoever that would be. And that could be the Phoenix Suns, which I'm going to get to, or maybe it's not, because the Clippers and Utah Jazz have kind of slipped up a little bit, and guess who's playing well? Oh, the Phoenix Suns. And former racer, I'm bringing up the stats right now, actually. Thank you, StatMuse. Cameron Payne is playing. I know we've talked about it some, but I want to talk about it in some recency bias here. Cameron has played extremely well for the Phoenix Suns, who are now just one game back of the number one seed. Neil, the number one seed in the NBA for the Western Conference. You know, I mean, I know you've heard me talk about it, how tough the Western Conference is this year.
Yeah.
So Cam's last five games, hear me out on this one, he's averaging, and he had a good game last night in the Garden against the New York Knicks, the steaming hot New York Knicks. He had a big performance against the New York Knicks on Monday night. But he's averaging, Cam's averaging in the last five games, 7.6 points per game, 2 assists, 1.8 rebounds. He's also shooting 44% from 3 and 44% from the field. Against the New York Knicks, to stop their winning streak, he had 11 points, 4 assists, and 3 rebounds, and most of that stealing a block, and most of that came in the first half with the team needing to lift off the bench. They were down 9 at the half, believe, 9 or 8 at the half, and they needed, and Cam had been, he was 4-for-5 from the field, kind of keep them in it. Mm-hmm. And then they got their stroke going in the second half. All the starters did, Chris Paul, Devin Booker, so on and so forth. So two racers with some Western Conference implications here, very potentially could be in the playoffs. Suns certainly in the playoffs, and Ja, very likely they're going to be in the play-in at least, but maybe a 6th seed. Could get interesting.
Good.
I'm not ruling out the mathematical possibility of the Phoenix Suns being a 3 seed and the Memphis Grizzlies being a 6th seed. Then we're going to have a 7-game series with John Cam both on the same court.
Man.
I'm just saying it's possible. Not going to rule it out. Anything can happen. You got 12 to 13 games left for most of the teams in the Western Conference. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch it. I know a lot of Racer fans around here are definitely going to be clued in to what Cam's doing and what Ja's doing here in the stretch at the close of the season. But it's, you know, 72 games is almost up. The play-in tournament starts in 2-3 weeks. the actual NBA playoffs start in a month. So we're there. And the year two of the John Morant experience and year five, six of Cameron Payne and his rebirth in Phoenix is, you know, it's crazy how fast this year went from a season perspective. Now, we won't have the NBA playoffs end until the middle of July because they space it all out with all the games. But, you know, Racer fans might be watching the NBA playoffs throughout this summer. See how far both the Memphis Grizzlies and the Phoenix Suns go. So, really exciting to see those two guys play well, particularly in the month of April.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I hope they do well. That will keep my interest because as soon as they're out, it's sure. baseball season.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a baseball season for everybody around here. I definitely needs to be baseball season for me. My Strat-O-Matic team was awful the
you
first
still have
month.
Tatis?
No, I traded Tatis.
You traded. That's what I thought. You did.
Traded Vlad Guerrero Jr. too.
Okay.
Yeah, and look what I'm paying for it. My offense has been awful.
Can't really say anything. I got like four guys that are slugging about 700 that I traded. So
yep.
I can't really say anything about that.
It hurts.
None of them were young superstars like you traded.
I got a ton.
Because I don't ever seem to get any of those.
I got a ton of pieces though, and we can commiserate some other time. It just makes me sad inside. I can't help it. I went and got pitching. I lowered my team ERA to like 4.
You didn't this month.
No, I didn't. No, none of them performed. Nobody pitched well.
You were my best series, 7 out of 9 against old Ed.
Yeah. Thanks, Neil. Yeah. Appreciate it, bud.
No, no problem.
Neil, looking forward to it, man.
On Friday?
Yeah, on Friday. I'm hearing you might have a very cool interview soon, actually.
Okay.
I do believe you'll be talking with Jeff Bidwell fairly soon.
That's what I hear. I don't know what it's about.
All right. Rumor has it.
Yeah.
It's been real. It's been fun. It's been real fun.
All right. See you Friday.
Yep. Thanks, Neil.